Welcome to episode 79 of Practical Defense, Shooting Survival Tips. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. This week, we're going to cover some great tips if you find yourself in a shooting at the office, school, or any other building. The technical term is called active shooter. I've wanted to cover this material for a while, but I didn't have the time to sit down and give it the full attention needed. This is a pretty complex topic, and I didn't want to shortchange it. But before we jump into it, I wanted to remind everyone about this month's seminar. It's on Saturday, June 20th, and the subject is defensive tactics. We cover some great material, such as threat zones, the criminal assault cycle, conflict indicators, and physical defense. I'm already receiving registrations, but there are still plenty of spots open for those who want to join in. I've posted my seminar schedule for the rest of the year, so for those in Los Angeles, or who will be in Los Angeles, I'd love to have you come by and take a class. You can find the schedule on my site at www.alexhaddix.com/class. All of the seminars are 2 hours and only cost $40. We'll be right back with some safety tips for surviving a shooting. This is going to be a densely packed episode, so strap in and get ready. In episode 77, I went over some survival tips for a terrorist attack. This week, I want to cover some tips on how to survive a shooting at your school, office, or any building for that matter. The police refer to this type of crime as an active shooter, meaning that this person is actively seeking out people and shooting them. The purpose of these attacks is not for monetary gain. It is purely to hurt and kill other people. It's out of anger and malice, but I'll go into that a little bit later. Now, over the past few years, these types of attacks have increased, although they're still quite rare. Back in the 90s, the common term for this was going postal, because there was a rash of these types of shootings by U.S. postal workers in their post offices. But there have been also these types of shootings in offices, banks, restaurants, churches, and schools. The Columbine High School shooting grabbed the world's attention in April of 1999. There were also the Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, called Virginia Tech, and that was in 2007, and the Northern Illinois University shooting on Valentine's Day in 2008. If you think shootings like these are the exclusive realm of gun-toting, shoot-'em-up American cowboys, there was also a school shooting in Albertville, Germany in March of this year. This is an unfortunate but worldwide phenomenon. Last week, I received an email from a listener who attends one of these schools and personally knows a survivor of one of these incidents. Her friend was actually shot and survived the event. She thanked me for the information and ended her email with, "You save lives." So, Katie, thank you for your email. It really touched me. I'm going to toss out some numbers here to put things in a bit of perspective. Now, as with all statistics, you can split them any number of ways and even get them to jump through fiery hoops if you wanted. As Benjamin Disraeli once wrote, there are three kinds of lies: lies, damned lies, and statistics. So, with that in mind, I offer up the following statistics. In the United States, according to the USA Today, there have been 50 major school shootings since 1983. They don't define what major is. 32 of the 50 have happened in the past decade. The most per year were in 2006 with 6, 2007 with 4, and 2008 with 5. So, now let's take a look at these active shooters, how the police will react, and the steps that you can take to protect yourself if you ever find yourself in one of these horrible situations. Active shooters can fall into several categories. Now, sometimes they're called domestic terrorists or criminal psychotics, and their actions can even fall into the workplace violence categories. Now, often, these angry people fall into all three categories at once. Now, I've done quite a bit of research into this area for my book on workplace violence. I've come across a whole bunch of PowerPoint presentations put together by various police departments from around the country, and they use identical text for their slides. Now, unfortunately, I haven't been able to trace back to the origin of the material. Now, as a writer and a journalist, I always prefer to quote the primary source rather than rely on secondhand material. But I just haven't been able to find it. Yet. I haven't stopped trying. And now there are several factors that make an active shooter really threatening. First, their actions are not random. They have a plan. They prepare in advance and then execute that plan. And in some cases, they've even practiced and rehearsed the events. Now, Harris and Klebold spent months practicing and planning before Columbine. They even tried to use homemade explosives in their coordinated attack, but fortunately, the devices failed to work. At Virginia Tech, Cho brought chains and locks with him to barricade the doors to keep people from fleeing the building and to prevent the police from entering. Active shooters generally have a specific target in mind for the attacks. Now, often this is a teacher, a manager, a boss, a coworker, or even a love interest. Now, basically, these are people that he feels have wronged him. However, they will take out as many people as possible on the way to their target. Now, the purpose is to cause as much damage as possible before they're stopped. And that's another key point, until they are stopped. Active shooters have no regard for their personal safety. They do not expect to come out of the incident alive. They expect to be killed by the responding police or commit suicide when they're done, and this makes them exceptionally dangerous. The most dangerous foe you can ever face is the person with nothing to lose. If this person expects to die, he has nothing to lose. And other than that, there is no profile of an active shooter. So now let's turn to how the police are going to respond to an active shooter. First, police departments across the country have developed specific tactics to tackle these types of situations. They take it really seriously. I know for a fact that the Los Angeles Police Department trains rigorously. When holiday breaks come around and the schools are shut down, the LAPD will take over the empty school and run a few days' worth of drills on the campus for practice. They do this year-round, during the day, and at night. Now, it's going to take the first responders 5 to 10 minutes to show up. Now, this will be the police in your immediate area, you know, campus police, campus security, and local patrol. They may or may not try to enter the building. Sometimes they'll just create a perimeter and gather information. Other times, they will form dynamic assault teams and move in immediately. Now, it may take SWAT 10 to 15 minutes to show up, and they may take a few more minutes after that to assess the situation before they move in. Now, the police will move in as fast as they can. They know that the active shooter will not stop until they stop him, so they will move in as fast as they can, but they need to be safe and move with a purpose. A bunch of police storming the building and running around without organization would probably make things a lot worse. So realistically, you're looking at between 10 and 25 minutes before help arrives. That means you're on your own for what will seem like forever. At Virginia Tech in 2007, Cho killed 32 people and injured another 23 before killing himself in less than 10 minutes. He only killed himself after he had heard the police coming and he still had 200 rounds of unspent ammunition. The police entered the building after around 7 minutes or so. Now compare that to the Columbine incident in 1999. The shooters controlled the campus for 45 minutes before committing suicide. 13 people died and 24 were injured in that time. Now, if the bombs they had planted had gone off, it would have been much worse. Police SWAT didn't enter the campus for nearly 2 hours, and that was an hour after the shooters were already dead by their own hands. So you can see the response time has gotten a lot better over the years. And in fact, back in the day, the normal response was, secure the area and wait for SWAT to show up. Nowadays, officers are trained to form dynamic assault teams. Now, these are groups of 3 or 4 officers who, when they show up on the scene, form an assault group on the spot and go in. They may not even have met each other before this event, but they've all had the same training, and they take a position on the team, and they move in. Now, this type of dynamic grouping allows for the fastest means possible of addressing a threat like an active shooter. There's no wasted time waiting around while the body count mounts. Now here's something that's going to shock a few people. The responding police and assault teams will not immediately aid you. Their first priority is to find the active shooter or shooters and neutralize the threat. If you're injured, you're just going to have to wait. Now do not expect them to stop their search for the shooter and help you. Every second not spent in hunting down and stopping the shooter is potentially more casualties. Now if you come into contact with responding officers, Do not run at them. They don't know who you are, and for all they know, you could be the shooter. Officers will be on edge and expect shots to come from every corner. Officers will shoot anyone that is armed or moves on them in what can be interpreted as an aggressive manner. So, to help you not get accidentally shot by the responding officers, do not run at the officers. Do what the officers tell you to do, and keep your hands visible at all times. If you happen to be near the active shooter when the police enter the area, you want to hit the ground and stay there. You want to do your best not to get caught in the crossfire. Keep your hands visible and don't move until ordered to do so by the officers. Remember that sometimes active shooters work in teams, like at Columbine, and the police do not know you and it's a highly volatile situation. Just try to stay out of the way. Now next, the police will treat everyone in the area as a suspect. Now once the active shooters are taken down, they will move everyone out in a controlled manner under escort. Now those may take some time, so you need to be patient. Those needing treatment will receive treatment. However, everyone will be separated, interrogated, and probably searched. Now again, they want to make sure that they get the bad guys, and they have no way of telling who is good and who is bad just by looking at you. It'll be hard, but try not to take it personally. You know, the police have similar procedures for hostage situations because criminals will often try to sneak out with the hostages as the police rescue them. They sometimes try to blend in with the victims to avoid being caught. Now, if you're in a building with an active shooter, there are some things that you should do. And remember, your first priority is your personal safety. Now, second, you want to try to be a good witness. You know, call 911 and report the following information. And I've pulled this list from a Southern Illinois University police recommendations on active shooters. So what you want to report to the police is your specific location, you know, the building name or number, you know, the office or classroom number, the number of people at your location, you know, injuries, you know, the number of people injured and the type of injuries, the number of assailants, the race and gender of the assailant or assailants, the clothing description, you know, the color and style and type and things like that, physical features, such as height, weight, age, hair color, facial hair, glasses, and so on and so forth. Now, do you recognize the shooter? If you do, what's his name? You want to try and give them the number and type of weapons. It's a rifle, a shotgun, or a handgun. Does the assailant have a backpack? Now, have you heard explosions separate from the gunshots? Now, you might not have all of this information, but report what you do know. Now, here are some other things that you should do, and much of this list comes from the UCLA Safety Tips and Guidelines Regarding Potential Active Shooter Incidents Occurring on Campus. Ooh, that's a heck of a name. So, if you're in a classroom, or a room, or an office, stay there. Secure the door. If the door doesn't have a lock and opens inward, use a good heavy door wedge and drive it in as hard as you can, and otherwise look for heavy furniture to barricade the door. If the door has a window, cover it with something. Now, depending upon the gunman's location, you may also want to consider trying to escape through windows or other openings. You know, have someone watch as you get as many students or employees out of the windows if you're on the ground floor, and as calmly and quietly as possible. And if you have to, break the window. If you need to run, run in a zigzag pattern. Remember the 21 feet, 7 meter rule. And this, again, applies to a whole bunch of stuff. Now, if no police have yet shown up to the scene, you want to move well away from the incident area and find a safe cover position. And you don't want to go to the parking lots. And then wait there for the police to arrive. Now, if the officers are already on scene, you should get out and move toward any police vehicle when it's safe to do so while keeping your hands on the top of your head and do exactly and immediately what the police tell you to do. Now again, remember, the police don't know you, and if you're an escaping victim or attacking them, they have no idea. So be careful and do what they say. Now you don't want to leave the area entirely, because you may have information that the responding police will need. So once you're in a safe place, stay put. If the windows don't open, or you can't break them, and you're not on the ground floor, get out of sight from the front door, stay low, and stay quiet. And you want to seek cover. Remember from episode 53 on cover versus concealment. And here's some other general safety tips. You want to silence your cell phones. You do not want to draw attention to yourself or your room. You want to turn off radios and turn off computer monitors if necessary. Place signs in the exterior windows to identify the location of injured persons. You want to keep people in the room quiet and calm. Now, you need to take a leadership role to do this, and your demeanor will have a huge effect on the other people in the room. 95% of the people out there are sheep. You need to be one of the 5% and take control. After securing the room, people should be positioned out of sight and behind items that might offer additional protection, such as walls and desks and filing cabinets and things like that. And again, review episode 53 on cover versus concealment. And you want to turn off the lights. You want to make your room look dark and unoccupied. Now, if the shooter gains entry to your room and shoots the place up, play dead. The shooter may even come back and sweep the rooms again. And this is what happened in the Virginia Tech incident. One man survived because he played dead. He was already shot twice, and he played dead, and the shooter came back around and shot him two more times in the leg for a total of like 4 wounds. He attributes his survival to his playing dead. Other people who didn't play dead or were unable to lost their lives. Only 5 people in his classroom survived. There's a good show on the Biography Channel called I Survived. They had a great episode on the Virginia Tech shooting, and I recommend checking it out. I've seen it come up a few times in reruns, so if you watch for it, you might be able to catch it. Now, I TiVo the show every week, but I often find it hard to watch. The show is almost exclusively the survivors telling their stories, and some of the crimes are just horrific. But try to catch the episode on Virginia Tech. It is really worth watching. Now, I'm going to stop here. This episode is densely packed with information and detail, and probably more than anyone can be reasonably expected to remember during a crisis. You'll probably have to listen to it a few times to internalize a lot of the information. But I hope it helps. So, this week on Active Shooters, our summary is: the actions of an active shooter are not random. They have a plan, and they run that plan. Active shooters have specific targets in mind, but they will also act on targets of opportunity. An active shooter will cause as much death and destruction as possible until they are stopped. It will take 5 to 10 minutes for the first response from the police. SWAT may take 10 to 15 minutes to show up. Now, during that time, you're on your own. You must take responsibility for your own survival. The Columbine incident lasted 45 minutes, and Virginia Tech lasted less than 10 minutes. The police's first priority is neutralizing the active shooter. They will not stop to aid victims until the shooter is down. Officers will shoot anyone that is armed or moves on them in what can be interpreted as an aggressive manner. So to avoid being shot by the responding officers, do not run at the officers. Do what the officers tell you to do, and keep your hands visible at all times. The police will treat everyone in the area as a suspect. It'll take a little while for the police to sort everything out, and they don't know who you are, so try to be understanding and patient. Try not to take it personally. Again, you are responsible for your personal safety. You want to try to be a good witness. If you're in a classroom, a room, or an office, stay there, secure the door. Barricade the door and block any interior windows. If it's safe, consider trying to escape the building. If you're on the ground floor, leave by windows, breaking them if you have to. When you run, run in a zigzag pattern. Remember the 21 feet, 7 meter rule. Review episode 77 for running in a zigzag pattern and the 21 feet, 7 meter rule. Review episode 53 on cover versus concealment. If you're in a room with other people, take a leadership role, keep everyone calm and everyone quiet. If the active shooter gains entry to your room and shoots the place up, play dead. And again, just like episode 77, this is one of those episodes that is crucial if you ever need it, but I really pray that you don't. And as always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on TaekwondoTimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. And this month's seminar on June 20th is Defensive Tactics. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Well, that does it for this episode.
Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.